Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
8:14, everybody has a story, and the Pope, new Pope, has a story, and Jerry Honore has a story as well, a family historian with a historic New Orleans collection, who I cannot believe turned around so quickly the election of the new Pope and found out that he had some New Orleans roots. With that, we welcome in Jerry Honore. How you doing? Jerry Honore. Did I get it right?
You got it right. I'm doing well. Good morning.
Thanks. Tell me about how in the world did you get from the election of the new Pope and the white smoke and the seagulls on a roof to New Orleans roots so quickly?
Well, honestly, it was not what I set out to look for. Prevost, although New Orleanians might think otherwise, is actually a very common French surname. And so I honestly thought that the Holy Father might have some French-Canadian roots, being a Chicagoan, or might have some Acadian roots, Acadians who remained up in Canada, and a very distant connection to some Louisiana families, maybe, you know, 8, 9, 10 generations ago, something like that. Mm-hmm. But what I discovered is that, no, not at all through his father's side, but his mother was actually the last of 7 girls in her family, and she was born in Chicago, but only after they had migrated from New Orleans.
Hmm.
The Pope's grandparents and his 6 older aunts all born and raised right here in New Orleans in the 7th Ward neighborhood.
So the Pope's grandparents and his, mm-hmm. Who did you say, sisters? No.
His mother's older siblings. His mother was the
his
only
aunts.
One born
okay,
after
gotcha.
The family had made their way to Chicago. They followed that migration northward like so many families.
Can you tell what part of the 7th Ward, Jari?
Yes, absolutely. They lived for a time on North Roman, but in the 1900 census in particular, we can place them at 1933 North Prairie Street, which is just a few doors off of Claiborne Avenue. And I was hoping that the home would still be standing, mm-hmm. but like so many of the structures in that neighborhood, it was taken for the Claiborne overpass.
Wow. What do we know about his family? Are there a lot of historical facts about them, or do we know what kind of work they did?
Well, you know, on a short turnaround, we know a few things. As I said, his mom was born, Mildred Martinez was born in 1912 in Chicago. The family migrated there at some point between 1910 and 1912, so within that window. But before that, Joseph Norval Martinez and Louise Bacquier, they married here, started their family here. The dad worked as a cigar maker, which, many of us in New Orleans have, you know, grandfathers, great-grandfathers, or what have you, who were engaged in cigar making. That was a big business then. And they were married, the Holy Father's grandparents, in 1887 at Our Lady of the Sacred Heart Church, which was on Annette Street, also in the 7th Ward. The original church was destroyed in the hurricane of 1915. So the replacement church, the Our Lady of the Sacred Heart that most people would be familiar with, the building is still there, but it's on St. Bernard Avenue now.
Do we know if the cardinal, before he became Pope Prevost, has ever been to New Orleans or visited any of the places where his grandparents were raised?
I don't know for certain, but I know that some of the other media outlets have been in touch with his brothers,
mm-hmm.
and I don't believe so. I don't believe that there was, they certainly knew that they had New Orleans roots, but they've said it is not something that they pursued.
They're
a Chicago family,
a Chicago family for all intents, right?
for all intents and purposes, a Chicago family. And very common for here in South Louisiana, when they made that migration northward to Chicago, they assumed a white identity. But prior to that time, for generations, they were people of color here in New Orleans. They're listed in censuses and other records as either black or mulatto. And a lot of families did that. It was a survival measure, you know, during that oppressive time of Jim Crow. If you were physically able to pass, well, a lot of families made that decision.
So what led them to Chicago, Jari?
Do you know? Certainly better opportunities. I think economics was the big thing. And just getting, out of the South. You know, this is a time when every aspect of life was circumscribed in some way by segregation, and it's a difficult world. It was a difficult world to live in, as many New Orleanians who are much older than I can attest.
Yeah, I hate talking about this because to me we all descended from Africa anyway, so we're all in essence Africans, and I don't understand the silliness with drawing the distinction anyway, but some people do. When it comes to his family, what brought them, where'd they come from to land in New Orleans? We'll talk about that when we come back. We're talking about with Jari Honoré, family historian with the Historic New Orleans Collection, about the new Pope, Pope Leo, former Cardinal Prevost from Chicago's grandparents who grew up in New Orleans and then went to Chicago and assumed a white identity in 19... When was it, Jari?
Sometime about 1912.
1912. All right, we'll pick it up there. We come back. Any questions, comments, 504-260-1870. That's the Old Corner Jeweler text me line. Everybody's got a story, man. I'm telling you. 820 traffic now, WWL. 824, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jari Honoré, family historian with the Historic New Orleans Collection, about the new Pope and some ties that his grandparents had to New Orleans. Grew up on North Pier. This house is no longer there. It was a victim of the I-10, I guess. Moved to Chicago in 1912. They were listed on the census, as I understand it, as black, his grandparents were. And then you said they assumed a white identity. As I told you, I think it's all silliness anyway, and it goes to who's considered black in America and who's considered white and so forth. How does the Pope identify? Do you know, or how did Cardinal?
Being a child born long after this migration in Chicago, he identifies as white, as a white American, and his brothers have stated that to the media since the question has arisen, and that's not surprising. I mean, that's the nature of passing, is that as the generations go on, those who are the after product, the byproduct of it, they simply don't know. They don't have any clue that at some point in their family history, somebody or some people made that decision to pass, essentially. But I don't think that is the most important part of the story. The important part is that the Pope shares a common lineage, common history with so many of our old, Louisiana Creole families here in New Orleans.
And that was my next question, which is when you get mm-hmm. to cousins, everybody's a cousin with somebody else, a second, a third, or whatever. They got to have some of the Pope's cousins around still, I would think, right?
Sure. And I've been hesitating to say this because, people will go off and say, oh, you're a Smith. My mama's a Smith. Mm-hmm. We must be related. You know how people sort of do that. They don't do aggressive fact checking when it comes to family. But, yeah, there are certainly relatives of the Holy Father who carry names like Flott and Bonaris or Batnaris, depending on how you want to pronounce it, Fourier, Ruzon, and even Siraparu. Which are all very, very common names here in New Orleans.
So how would somebody go about determining if they share a common lineage with the new Pope?
The best way to answer that question, or any question related to your ancestry, is to do a bit of research, to peruse your family tree if you have one existing. And the primary names in his family are Martinez, which would be Martinez just about anywhere else in the country, but we tend to use the French, the Gallicized pronunciation in New Orleans. Baquier, B-A-Q-U-I-E, with the accent ague over the E. Grandbois, which is a name you won't hardly find anymore, but it used to be a surname here. And Ramos, R-A-M-O-S. So those are some of the major names in their family line. And all of these people were, practicing Catholics from right here in New Orleans. And I think that's incredible that we are the American city, other than his birthplace of Chicago, that can claim this connection to the first American pope.
Are the stronger New Orleans roots on his maternal or paternal side?
Oh, it's maternal. It's okay. Maternal, the side. As best as we can tell, the father's side is not linked to Louisiana. And that's interesting, because everybody assumed that, the Prevost name, Prevost family, would be the connection. Mm-hmm. But as I said, you have French-Canadian Prevost. You have people in France who are Prevost. It's a relatively common French surname.
And what was his mother's maiden name, do you know?
His mother's maiden name is, she was Mildred Agnes Martinez.
Martinez, that's right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to what brought her to this country, what do we know what that is?
She was born here. She was born in Chicago.
Her mother's. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to ask. The New Orleans connection is what I'm getting to, Jari. How did they get to New Orleans?
From what I gather, and I wouldn't make this as a definitive statement, some of them came by way of the Haitian Revolution, like so many New Orleans families in 1889, in that time period, after having already fled the uprising in Saint-Domingue, which was the colonial name for Haiti. They went to other places around the Caribbean, like Cuba and what have you, and then ultimately New Orleans. And then some of them, I am willing to bet, neglected to mention Lamel, which is a very big family in South Louisiana. They're also connected to Lamels. Those families have deep colonial roots that are, rooted in slavery and rooted in, relationships that were formed during slavery, so that many of them obtained their freedom and, were free people for several generations.
I'm not asking you to prove a negative here or anything, but as far as we know, this is the first pope to ever have any connection to New Orleans, right?
Yes.
That's awesome. Thank you. I appreciate your work, Jari. I really do. We'll have to have you on again to talk about some New Orleans names and legacies and so forth. Jari Honore, family historian with the Historic New Orleans Collection. When we come back, we'll talk to Alex Hammerstone about some text scams that are out there. Right now, we break for WWL First News. 8:47, 13 till 9, rainy Friday. Could be that way all day long, really, rain off and on. And the only thing we can hope is that it doesn't park over one area. Then a 30% chance for showers tomorrow, 40% on Mother's Day. Cools off on Monday, highs of 79. But by Thursday, we'll have our first 90 of the year. And then from then on, look out, it's summertime. Alex Hammerstone joins us now, our friend, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. Talk about the latest scams that are going around. How you doing, Alex?
Not too bad. Things are great here in Ohio. How about you?
All right. We got a thing going on. I don't know if these things come in spurts or not, but man, I was besieged the other day with texts about tolls, and some of the addresses were so close. We were talking to the director of the OMV, and he sent me an email trying to clear it up, and then I misread it because it looked like the addresses were so close to the actual real address that I gummed it up on the air trying to fix it. So let's talk about text messages and outstanding tolls, and generally speaking, is it best to just ignore them?
So to answer the last question first, absolutely. So just ignore these. They're pretty obviously scams. The other thing is, you're dealing with the government, right? And so the government's not going to text you about unpaid, bills, especially, if they don't have your account number and things like that. The other thing is, by ignoring a text message demanding, a few dollars for a toll, if you're going to think that through, they're going to end up sending you a letter, right? If it is a real message, they're going to end up sending you a letter. So just wait for the letter, wait for a letter in the mail. So if it turns out to be real, which is incredibly unlikely, they'll contact you another way. But as a general rule, if you get a text message saying you owe a toll, you can just delete it, report junk, and ignore it.
Do they come in spurts or not? Why does it seem as though I get five of them in an afternoon, then I go a couple of weeks and don't get any?
They do, and so there's a number of ways that these are done. But a lot of times, you know, these scam groups will kind of buy lists of phone numbers, or they'll just, you know, text every single phone number. And it really is a game of numbers. So even if you only, let's just say, you know, get 1% or, you know, even a tenth of 1% of people to fall for this, you know, you can make a really good living doing that if you're sending out hundreds of thousands of these. So the more texts they send, the more money they make. As far as the kind of frequency, it's also, you know, it's the carriers, that the telecom carriers, you know, have gotten better at kind of preventing some of this stuff. But it's an ongoing battle. So as these scammers kind of find new ways to get around these types of protections, you're going to see those increase for a while until they can be beaten back again.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Matter of fact, let me take a break for traffic. We'll open the Equinor Jeweler text me line, 504-260-1870. If you've gotten any texts that are scams, please let me know so I can share them with the audience and nobody falls victim because, as Alex just said, you know, you cast a wide net. And if you send out 10,000 and you get 25 to respond, maybe you pay for your day's food. I don't know. 504-260-1870. I'll talk about regulation and what can be done to prevent this kind of stuff when we come back. Right now, traffic, WWL. 8:57, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sex. So we've already established any text message about outstanding tolls, ignore it. Anyone, no matter who it looks like it's from, ignore it. Alex, somebody texted in. I think this is a good question. What does it do when you report a text message as junk? It seems to me that it doesn't help. Who gets it and what do they do about it? That's a great question because, like this text, I have reported numerous ones as junk, but I keep getting them.
So that's actually a really good question because sometimes I wonder the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. So I report them as junk as well. But it generally is going to have to go to the carrier, so your cell phone provider, or, you know, if it's an iPhone and you're using iMessage, you know, to Apple and things like that. And what it does is it kind of allows them to, if they get a lot of reports for a certain number, they can add it to their list. And I think you'll see, you know, when you start to see a lot of silence calls, I don't know if people are noticing that as well.
A lot of what?
But where your phone won't ring, it'll just show, you know, probable junk or probable spam call. Mm-hmm. So it adds it to that kind of list. So it is helpful in that way. But yeah, certainly it does feel like reporting junk doesn't do a whole lot. But in the back end, there are things going on that are kind of creating those lists of, you know, of numbers that we kind of want to keep off our phones.
So somebody else texted in and said that their mother, speaking of Mother's Day, loves to engage with the junk calls that they get. But is it better to just not engage and just leave them alone? Or if you answer the phone, does it show that it's an active number? Or if you send it to voicemail, does it show that it's an active number? Do you let it just ring until it stops ringing? Tell me what to do. Tell us what to do.
Sure, absolutely. So, yes, so answering the phone or replying, it does let them know it's an active number. That's absolutely true. But when it comes to, I know a lot of people like to kind of, you know, engage with these scammers and joke around and things like that. But there's another piece to it also, right? Because as we discussed, it really is a numbers game. So you're just a number to them, you know, whether it's a phone number or kind of you're not really a person, you're just a scam opportunity. And so the issue is when you start to engage with them, you know, it's you may kind of get more attention, right? You might annoy somebody that's a scammer, and then they choose to kind of focus on you. So rather than you just being a number, then you become a target, right? You become somebody that they really want to spend more time on to try to scam or take your money. So generally, I would advise against engaging with these scammers that call you.
So do you let it go to voicemail? What do you do? Do you ignore? What do you do when it rings and it's a spam call?
So I ignore and I let it go to voicemail. They almost never leave a voicemail.
Right.
And then I go into my, you know, I have an iPhone and I block that number. So, you know, over the years, my block list is thousands of numbers.
Yeah, because the question is anybody really watching any of this? And I'm like you, Alex. I wonder sometimes. Thank you, sir. Have a great Mother's Day weekend. Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. We're going to take a break, come back, talk eating and drinking with Ian McNulty on WWL.